Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Weird Tales from the Woods, Volume 3, Story 1. A few years ago, I was in the basement putting wood in the furnace. My oldest kids were at school, and my youngest was outside helping my dad rake leaves. I heard clear as could be the sound of children's laughter and footsteps running up the front stairs. It was so clear I could hear that there were multiple footsteps as if there were several people. I knew the kids would be home soon and thought I had lost track of time, but another thought occurred to me. We had recently added an addition to the back of the house, and this included another set of steps. Since they were wider than the front steps, I had been primarily using them and used the front steps for storage. There was so much stuff on the front steps, it was impossible for someone to walk up, let alone run. Yet, the sound of someone on those steps is very distinctive. I finished my work and went upstairs to discover that I had not lost track of time and the kids were not due home for almost an hour, and my youngest was still outside and had not come in at all. I have no explanation for this, but it never happened again. My youngest son tells me occasionally that he hears footsteps in the hallway at night and sometimes people talking but not talking to him. He says it's like someone is having a conversation in the hallway and he just can't hear what the words are. Just for some background, my house was originally built in 1825, around the time the town nearby was founded. There are several graveyards within a mile of our house, and many of the graves date from before the 1800s, and some are so old that dates are worn off. On the hill behind our house, I have found what I think might have been a homestead. There are lots of loose stones in one spot, and I have found old square nails, bent pieces of metal, and several pieces belonging to a cast iron stove within the stones. Story number two. When I was in my teens, I heard stories of a creepy small town in the Appalachian Mountains of Virginia. Rumor had it that if you were born there, you could never leave, and most strangers that showed up mysteriously disappeared, never to be heard from again. One of the accounts I heard involved a crazy old man who wore his Sunday morning best while riding his bicycle on hot summer afternoons. That old man even creeped out the other locals. So, when I was old enough, I wanted to see if some of the stories I heard were true. It was a late autumn afternoon when I arrived, and I decided the best course of action was to just pass through town and not stop, but see if some of the places in the stories still existed. Sure enough, the town was exactly as described to me, and very little had changed over the years. At this point, I started to get concerned. Those stories began to take on a whole new meaning, and I could feel the eyes of the locals watching me. I left town shortly after sundown, but about 5 miles out, my car started having problems. Mind you, I hadn't spoken to a soul since I arrived. I decided the best thing to do was to stay put in my car and wait it out in hope I could flag someone down in the morning. Needless to say, nothing goes according to plan. Around 8:30 p.m., well, after dark, a huge thump hit the back of my car. I had nothing but a pocket knife with me, and I knew I was no match for any trouble that may come my way. 5 minutes or so passed, and then another thump on the back of my car. Even though I was out of the town, I still felt this eerie feeling of being watched. The thumps hitting the back of my car only made it worse. Sitting in the dark, getting cold and hungry, not knowing if my mind was playing tricks on me or not, I figured the thumps I heard were just acorns falling out of the trees. Yet the feeling of being watched remained. After another hour of the thumps coming at regular intervals, I had enough. Every hair in my body was standing up, and every instinct I had told me I could just be in a cage if I remained in the car, so I decided to follow the road back to town. Normally, walking down the road wouldn't bother me, but it was then I realized there wasn't a sound coming from the woods around me. Not a cricket chirping, no owl hooting. In fact, there wasn't even any wind stirring the tree leaves. Something was definitely wrong. I decided maybe the road wasn't the safest place after all, as I could be easily seen from both directions. I stepped off the road and moved 25 yards into the wood line, and still no noises came except for the crunching of leaves beneath my feet. I definitely felt very exposed. Anything or anybody out there could hear my every move. After about 15 minutes of walking in the wood line, though it felt like hours had passed, I came across a small trail. I figured I'd follow that trail for a while in hopes of finding help without having to walk all 5 miles back to town. As I moved further and further down that path, the wood seemed to grow closer and closer until it was nearly pitch black. I still had the feeling of being watched, and every now and then I swear I heard something moving behind me, yet at a distance where I couldn't see anything. If it weren't for the full moon barely breaking through the holes in the tree canopy, I wouldn't have been able to follow the trail. Something was definitely following me now, and I hoped I could either hide or escape from whatever it was. Suddenly, out of the darkness, I saw a light in the distance. I couldn't have been walking on that small trail for more than 5 or 10 minutes, with whatever was following me getting closer and closer. The pucker factor was really up there at this point. As I made my way down the trail towards the light in the woods, I noticed it was a 2-story farmhouse, and every light in the place was on. As I approached the house, the lights started going out systematically, one by one. At this point, I was sure whoever was home knew I was coming. Now, I was really stuck. Should I go to the house and knock on the door, or face whatever was following me? I was moving much slower now, and whatever was following me had slowed too. And yet the lights still continued to go off in sequence. When I was about 35 or 40 yards from the house, the last light went off, and everything was dark again. I stopped in my tracks, waiting for someone to come bursting out the door with a shotgun aimed right at me, mistaking me for an intruder. What happened next was nothing like that. A high-pitched shrill of a young girl's voice screeched from the house, breaking the eerie silence. I just about jumped 10 feet in the air when I heard her say, "Good night, John boy." Obviously, this story isn't true, but take it with a grain of salt. Story number 3. This happened when I was 13 or 14 years old, and my best friend at the time lived about 1/2 mile from my place if you cut across the field. My mom was a hairstylist, and my stepdad had business 2 nights a week, so I was home by myself, and my friend's mom also worked nights. Pretty much we did as we wanted, and he stayed at my place or vice versa. One day after school, we had got to my place after dark. I would imagine around 7:30 or 8 p.m., this would have been the middle of winter, if I remember right. We were just hanging out watching TV, and all of a sudden my dog at the time, a 3-year-old boxer, got up and started growling out the window for no reason. This was the friendliest dog ever and liked everyone. I was pretty sure you'd have no problem rocking right up to our house if you wanted to. Me and Jesse, my friend, became very quiet and just sat and listened when it sounded like we heard faint footsteps outside. I really got freaked out because it was just me and Jesse sitting there, and the dog never acted like this. I grabbed my .22 and taped a flashlight on the front, and it headed out the door. Of course, now I know that that really was a bad idea, but hey, I was a kid. I let the dog out, and he took off running into the woods. I checked around the place and saw nothing out of the ordinary. We walked around the house and noticed nothing different, no footprints. I started shining the flashlight around and let off a couple of warning shots into the ground next to me. I yelled a couple of times, warning who or whatever was there to show itself or leave. Next, I was going to go get the snowmobile started, and I was pulling it over. My friend kept hitting me on the shoulder. I thought he was just messing around, so I kept pulling it over, and then he finally yelled at me and said, "Look down there." And this is when it gets weird. The only way I can explain this is where our house was built was halfway up on the side of a hill. A road curved around our house and down into the ravine and over the river. Then it took a sharp 90-degree turn to the right and a sharp 90-degree turn to the left. Then one straight west towards the highway that ran north and south. On the road between the two 90s is what looked like 2 semis pulling doubles of the small trailers with at this time wasn't even heard of, yet like the mini Fiat or Scion cars in between them. All 4 of the vehicles had very bright flashing lights and no noise to go with them. They were making a big loop between the two 90s on the road. I don't even know what possessed me to start walking down the road towards them, but I think it was mainly I couldn't believe what I was seeing with my own 2 eyes. Once I got to the bridge over the river, before the first 90, all the vehicles straightened out in one line on the road and headed back towards the highway. The part that I've never been able to figure out is about how these vehicles were making the loop. It was like a 3-lane road at the most. I remember just standing there watching the vehicles leaving, and then I started to hear in the background what sounded like a box fan on low over the horizon headed back towards the east came an aircraft like nothing I've ever seen. It was triangular shaped with a bubble dome on the bottom that glowed with a light similar to that of a candle. If I had to guess, I would say it was about half mile off the ground at the most and moving very slow. I watched it pass overhead and just keep going. This is quite possibly the most scared I have ever been in my life. I called the cops not knowing what else to do and then called my grandparents and had them come over and get me and Jesse. The next day, the Minneapolis Star Tribune reported close to over 100 reports of a UFO sighting. I didn't like being alone at that place for a long time after this. The only conclusion I have come to now is that the spaceship I saw was a prototype of a UAV at the time, and they had started testing it out at the Grand Forks Air Base. I still have no idea what type of vehicle they were, the ones that I saw on the road. But I'm sure that they were either controlling or watching the spaceship I saw. To this day, my friend Jesse switches the subject or says, "I don't know what you're talking about," every time I bring it up, because I guess some memories are just left buried. Next story. One night, my brother and I were camped out on the extreme south end of the reservation. We'd been working all day improving a winding road that led to an even more remote area on an empty plateau above a desert wasteland. Things had not been going right. Belly troubles, getting stuck, setting bear traps, and stuff. This was the area where our people had been herded over when they were chased out of Colorado. So we spent the night in a musty old shack by a mountain lake and woke up the next morning with a feeling that we were being watched. This doesn't stop us from stripping down and taking a spit bath in the morning light. As I'd finished and was throwing buckets of ice-cold water to rinse off my brother's naked body, the feeling got more intense and we both stopped. Looking down towards the reservoir, we both saw a blood-red Jeep making its way towards the shack and us. We both paused and looked at it. Our brother had shampoo and cold water streaming down him, and I had another bucket from the spring in my hand. We watched in silence as the Jeep turned up the final approach and sat. There were two long-haired heads inside that we could see, and faces ghostly white. I threw a bucket of water over his head. One of the two started to get out of the Jeep, and we came alive. My brother troweled his head, and I set down the now-empty bucket. A booted foot stepped out of the Jeep, followed by a pale younger fellow who spoke to us in a familiar tongue. It turned out that this guy had gotten drunk and taken his girlfriend out for a moonlight drive and they had gotten lost. He needed gas and directions. But they had been watching us all morning. And by the way, she smiled way too much. Next story. Back in the day when I was in college, me and a friend took off to a lake in the wilds of Glacier Country. I have extensive background exposure, even did a stint as a big game guide in a remote backcountry camp. On this day, we enjoyed the fishing and settled in for the night. I pulled out my pan and stoked up a nice fire. It was clear and cool as the sun faded into the western slopes. We cooked up some fresh rainbows with garlic and butter and filled our stomachs. I leaned back against the cooler after pulling out a refreshing beverage. My friend was soon asleep by the fire, as it had been a busy day. I sipped my beer and watched the moonlight bouncing off the little waves in the lake. There was still a light glow in the western horizon where the sun had gone down, and I could see the outline of the mountain peaks towering over the little lake. I slowly faded off to sleep with the sound of the lake waves gently lapping on the rocks. I woke with a start. The fire was out, the lantern was out too. The moon was gone, and it was pitch black. Something was wrong. The hair on the back of my neck stood straight out. I was paralyzed. I could hear my heart thumping as I strained to hear something in the bush. All was quiet. I had a horrible, uneasy feeling. I gathered myself together and started kicking around the fire. A small flame came alive and I quickly threw on some wood. In the firelight, I could see that my friend had woken up and was shocked to see his wide, open eyes staring at me. "What's wrong?" he asked. "Nothing. Go get in the tent." I lied. He went and crawled in the tent, but even in the light of the fire, I couldn't shake my wariness. Something was out there in the bush, and I could feel it watching me. I gathered up my light and flashed around camp. Nothing. Finally began to calm down and crawled into the tent. Then again, like clockwork, I woke completely tense. This time, I couldn't shake the feeling at all. I finally instructed my friend to wake up and get in the truck. I packed up all of the camp, drove around to the other side of the lake, and slept with him in the truck. At dawn, I got up and looked across the lake where we camped earlier, and another uneasy feeling came over me. I decided it was time to go home. I don't know what was out there or what was going on over there, but I know my instincts, and something was bad wrong with that place. Whatever it was, I will leave it to your imagination. It creeps me out to this day, thinking about that night. Next story. So I hate driving in Chicago, but I do it often and was stuck going to a train downtown for work. Rather than drive, I decided to take the bus to the airport and hop on the L to get to my destination. That way, I didn't have to try and find and pay for overnight parking. I previously picked a reputable place and was one of several people who had their car broken into when the guard left for a side action. All was good. It was a nice fall day and kind of cold, but nothing too bad. I caught my bus early and was downtown to catch the L around 5 p.m. The L took forever getting downtown through, and by the time I was getting near the hotel, it was already dark. The exit I needed from the L station to get to my hotel was in a mall that closed at 5, and everything was dark and closed up. As I'm getting off the train to exit to the street level, I have to follow this narrow winding path that runs all the way up through the center of this mall and comes out a side door. Of course, there's no one else around, so I start up the stairs, not realizing how many flights it is. About the second short flight, I start to hear footsteps behind me, which freaks me out. So as no new train had arrived and I hadn't seen anyone else get off on my stop. In fact, the whole train had been pretty empty as everyone was going out of town, not in at that time. So I grabbed my stuff and hustled up the stairs, moving as fast as I could without running and trying to look at the corners to see who or what is following me. Finally, I see there's a security gate with some guards milling around, waiting to clock out. I pull all my stuff up next to the gate and bend to tie my shoe and wait for whoever is following me. Turns out it's some young kid in a hoodie with earphones bopping along behind me. I decide we can play the game and I bend to tie the other shoe and act like I'm looking for something in my bag and let the kid go by. As he approaches, he seems kind of miffed when he sees the security people behind the gate and rolls past. After I finished, I strolled on out and made for the taxi stand outside the mall without looking at the kid, making sure that there were more people around. After a few seconds, I saw the kid duck back into the mall's L entrance and never saw him again. But I heard later there was an increase in security on the L lines in that area after several muggings occurred. So, this is another story I have, and it doesn't really involve me directly, but it does involve my brother. And we grew up in a small town in Michigan, and my friend's parents owned a home downtown that was one of the older homes in town. Prior to their owning it, it had been the family home of the people who owned one of the largest and oldest mortuary services in town. The house itself had never been used for showing or funerals, but did have extra storage and a large dumbwaiter-type elevator, large enough to fit a casket on stand, that ran from the first floor to the basement where a backup cooler and refrigeration units had been put in the 1940s. The only confirmed time that the house ever had bodies stored for more than a passing storm outage was during World War II, when several young men from the area that were part of a platoon were killed in the Pacific Theater, and they all returned for burial at the same time. The house had a backup cooler and trays for body cold storage, but that was usually left off. The mortuary would turn it on when the weather threatened snow, as they had to store bodies in their own cooler at the mortuary by packing the cooler with ice as the power was out for almost 2 weeks after a storm one year. We were often warned not to play in the elevator and to be careful in the basement, but we played there anyway. Both my brother and his friend swear they heard weird noises, saw shadows, and had other odd occurrences in that house, but I never was around or saw anything myself. The oddest of these occurrences happened to my brother and his friend. The two were playing one time and swore something locked them in the dumbwaiter elevator and wouldn't let them out. The dumbwaiter ran by pull cord from the inside as well as outside, but you couldn't open the doors between floors. I happened to find the elevator between floors and ran the dumbwaiter up to the first floor, not knowing they were stuck between floors. The two of them booked it out, and I at the time thought they were scared because they had gotten stuck in the dark. Haven't been back to Michigan since I graduated almost 15 years ago, so it seemed funny that my brother told me the story of that day when he did. Hadn't thought about that old place in years. Next story. The setting is a small western Kentucky town where I grew up not long after marrying my high school sweetheart. We looked at a trailer to rent in a smallish trailer park on the edge of town. It was very nice until we came to the master bedroom. The mattress on the bed had a large bloodstain on it that stretched nearly all the way across the mattress near the head of the bed. The landlord acted ashamed and said that she had told Rodney, which was her maintenance man, to get rid of it. I asked her what happened, and she quipped that evidently somebody had lost their cherry. Odd, at the head of the bed. Oh well, we rented it and moved our own bed in. Found out that Rodney was a strange dude, but very helpful. We had been living there for almost a year and had our first son, now an infant. That's when strange things started happening in the trailer. Things started moving from one place to another, like from the kitchen to the bedroom, the baby's room to the bedroom, the bathroom to the bedroom, always to the master bedroom. We blamed it on each other. One night, we heard a very close but muffled sounding gunshot. We both jumped out of bed to check on the baby. He was wide awake but unharmed. My then wife started looking out of the windows and throughout the trailer, but I went straight to my gun cabinet to check in there, even though I was sure none of the guns had been loaded. Nothing. We were convinced that it had come from inside the trailer, our bedroom to be exact, but there was no evidence to prove it. That was the first time we seriously discussed the bloodstained mattress and what may have caused it. The next day, I looked Rodney up and point-blank asked him what happened in the trailer before we moved in. He said that he wasn't supposed to say, but he could tell that something had happened. He told me that the previous tenant had put a pistol to his head and committed suicide right there in that bed. I felt like I'd been punched in the gut and now knew what we had heard. That day, we decided to move, but we still had to find another place. Two nights after the gunshot incident, we were awakened by what I can only describe as the baby's terrified screaming. We both ran over each other, running down the narrow hall to his room. She got there first, with me right on her heels. When she turned on the light, we both saw a dark shadow over the crib for a brief second before it shot straight into a wall and disappeared. She grabbed the baby and took him out of the room. We were both stunned to find that the baby's skin was very cold to the touch, and it took quite some time to get him calmed down. I was both scared and mad. Something was messing with our child, and I didn't know how to protect my own family against this presence. We moved in with my parents the next day until we found another place, and there were no more incidents after that. I bumped into Rodney about a month later and asked him for more details of the suicidal man. He said that the young couple had moved in. She was well along in her pregnancy, but the child was born very sick and passed away at around 2 months old. They were obviously distraught, but she took it very hard and for some reason blamed him for the baby being born sick. The relationship eventually dissolved and she left him. Less than a week later, he committed suicide. To me, that was a plausible explanation for why the events didn't start happening until we brought our newborn child into the trailer. Next story. This story takes place in Southeast Michigan in one of the state recreation areas. I was 21 and my friend was 23. We were out in late September, small game hunting one morning. Now, we both work retail and a sporting goods store, so we were both able to be in the woods on a Monday morning. As I said, we were small game hunting, both had shotguns. I was carrying a Stoger side-by-side in 20-gauge. My friend was carrying an H&R single-shot 410. We were both carrying sidearms, a Ruger single sixes in 22 mag. It was about 10 in the morning, and we were about 2 miles into the woods off the trail. As we came to a stand of pine trees, the kind that grow close together, and it's really dark under them, we started to notice that there were stuffed animals around. The issue was that they were all beheaded and nailed to a tree. Then the heads are nailed to the same tree, but about a foot higher. We stopped, looked, joked, but something just didn't feel right. Both of us got that uneasy feeling that we were being watched. We ended up counting the stuffed animals, and there were 43 of them on that tree. Some of these animals were fairly large. It must have taken several trips or multiple people to carry them 2 miles into the wilderness. The other freaky thing about this was that you could tell this was recently done. None of the animals were weather-worn or dirty or falling apart. It appeared that it had been done in the last week or so. After we got done counting them, we both got a serious get the F out of here feeling and decided that it was time to leave. Even though we had 4 firearms between us, I still didn't feel safe. Though I quickly replaced the 2 light game loads for a couple of buckshot loads in my 20-gauge, I know that was probably illegal to have it loaded as a deer load, but I didn't care. I've hunted in that recreational area over the years, but I have never been back to that area. I know exactly where it is on a map, and I stay far from it. Next story. This was back before 08. Four of us, about a quarter click up from the rest of our platoon, were heading west in extreme Afghanistan. Almost as if we were so far east, it felt as we were not in Afghanistan any longer, if you get my drift. We had droned above us, no heat signatures within miles other than small game that could be detected. Out of nowhere, we heard rocks being stepped on and a few twigs breaking. We immediately took cover, positioned to our right, and looked up the incline, which was on our left. It moved from our left to our right and back again, covering ground quickly for about 5 minutes. It was big, whatever it was, and we felt it was intelligent, and we checked our defensive positions, almost studying the four of us. Nothing on our night vision or from the predator, just the four of us, the rest of the platoon, which at this point was only a few hundred yards from us. And as fast as it started, it was over. Nothing more of it once everyone else came up. LT was in our grills a few seconds about why we stopped. Since nothing on night vision or the drones, we checked for hours till daylight and beyond for enemy contact and a cave or a cave system, and we found nothing. We chalked it up to possible small game of some type, but to the four of us to this day, it sends chills down our bodies thinking about it. Something out there within 30 meters of us was big and intelligent and sure as hell not scared of us. It was the strangest, most bizarre experience I've ever encountered in my 41 years. And I'm not ashamed to admit it scared the hell out of me more than anything else the whole time I was there, before or since. Next story. On the north side of Gallup, maybe a mile north of US 66, is a mess just shaped like a small volcano. It is much smaller now than it was when we were kids somehow. About five of us decided to spend the night on top of this mesa, and due to its remoteness, we decided to pack our 22 rifles. There was only one way to the top, via a path at the rear of the mesa. We climbed up to the top, set up camps and tents, and built a small campfire. There is no smell in the world like burning junipero bark. It's heavenly. So, darkness fell, and the storytelling begins. Imaginations run rampant, and unfortunately, so did a large male dancing, whooping, and hollering in front of the bonfire, which had erupted with no warning at the base of the mesa. This goes on for about 10 minutes, and the fire dies out and silence returns. Uncommon maturity kept us from panicking and maybe shooting at this apparition. We rode it out, placing armed guards at the trailhead atop the mesa, the only pathway, and at the edge of the other three corners of the hilltop. Morning arrived, and we found remnants of the fire, but no other evidence of who or what put on the show or why, or what the ulterior motive might have been. Come Monday in school, I'm approached by a fellow member of the school orchestra, me violin, him cello, a large Navajo kid housed at the school dorms. He actually lived on the reservation. He asked me how we enjoyed his tribal dance for a Saturday night. I still keep in touch with him. He works as an engineer for NASA now. Next story. It was a new home my grandparents built back in the 50s. The first story I heard came out of it when my mom was a young girl, maybe 8 or 9. She and my grandmother apparently had the same dream one night, and my grandmother woke with a start and ran to my mother's room, only to find a glowing object moving toward her bed. My grandmother yelled out, and it disappeared. They both said they couldn't explain it, but it felt like it was my mother's aunt, which was my grandmother's sister, who had passed away a few years earlier and always was jealous my grandmother had kids when she didn't. Fast forward 40 years later, and my grandfather passed away. One night, my sister was in their basement, which was always this sort of man cave before there was the term man cave, and she and some friends were using a Ouija board. Well, the spirit claimed to be my grandfather. No way, right? That's what my 19-year-old sister thought, so she asked her for the name of the best man at his wedding. She and her friends had no way of knowing, so they went up and told my grandmother, who confirmed that the answer given was correct. About 5 years after that, my grandmother lay dying of lung cancer, and my sister, mom, and stepdad were standing watch on what they knew would be her last night. I later had to drag the story out of them because they didn't want to talk about it, but I guess some crazy stuff went down. Mind you, my mom and sister are both doctors, As women of science, they believe very little in the spiritual, and while they haven't said it out loud, they never attend church, and I'm pretty positive they are atheists. Anyway, basically, as she breathed her last, stuff started not just falling off, but flying off the dresser and shelves in the room, and they saw the outline of a man, but in pure black shadow, standing in the room over the bed. After she took her last gasp, it disappeared. My mother couldn't reason her way out of it and went to see a psychic and described in better detail than I did what I saw. And she said the thing was pure evil and things probably didn't go well for my grandmother. Still gives me chills, which makes me feel stupid because it seems like such tall tales. And I don't believe in ghosts and UFOs and Bigfoot, but I do know what I saw in my mom and sister's face when they told me their very similar stories at separate times without the other present, and that is enough to scare the hell out of me. It doesn't end there. My sister inherited the house and moved in with her husband and three black labs. The dogs are your typical friendly, laid-back examples of the breed, but they began acting strangely. I know how many stupid stories have this phrase in it, but they really did. The biggest thing that bothered my sister was that they would often growl at an empty chair, hair raised and obviously spooked, which they never did in the other two places she lived at over the previous 3 years. Also, lights would go on and off in the house. In one case, my sister was in the shower with the door shut and locked, and the lights went out. She thought at first the power had gone out, but then they came back on as she went to get out. After she got back in, they went off again. At this point, she thought she left the door open, and her husband was messing with it, so she yelled, "Stop!" And they came back on and stayed on. She got out to scold them for messing around and saw that the door was in fact shut and locked. Anyway, she sold the house a few years later, and I still drive by when I go back to town. I've often wanted to go ask the owners if anything weird happened and maybe see if I could walk through the house and announce who I was to see if they were still there, but despite not believing, I don't think I want to take the chance of stirring anything up. Next story. Between New Mexico and Colorado, I live in San Jose, California. The foothills of Almaden Valley between Almaden and Guadalupe reservoirs were in the late 1800s cinnabar mines and Native American encampments. It is considered by many to be haunted, or at least spooky. In high school, an acquaintance of mine hiked the hills daily and nightly. One day he visited us in a frantic condition, pale and obviously terrified of something. He had just returned from a night maneuvers, and whatever he saw, and he was never too articulate as to what it was, rendered him speechless. He moved from the area with his family a short time later, and the real story was never obtained. Now that same area, nighttime, foggy, a friend and I are doing the reservoir to reservoir run in my 911 when we come up behind a motorhome lumbering down the road. We back way off, and it rounds a blind curve, exiting our line of sight. Forever. We rounded the curve moments later, and no motorhome in sight. We speed up to catch to it, thinking it could not have pulled that far away from us. Nothing. We backtrack, no side roads, and we check the creek bed. Nothing. Never did find it. Strange, but a rational explanation must exist for it. Now, the same area, hiking some days with friends, came across a cattle mutilation fitting the classical description, middle of nowhere, off the beaten trails. Also found an old homestead with a remarkably intact picket fence surrounding what is obviously an old small cemetery. One of the graves has been freshly dug. Find out later the grave held a recent murder victim. People talk about blood-curdling screams coming from the unseen. Here is my one experience. Same Bud and I sitting on a retaining wall of Guadalupe Reservoir when an unmistakable high-pitched wail scream can be heard coming from the roadway a good half mile away. My friend asks, "What the hell is that?" I tell him only one thing has that unmistakable shriek, and it will be upon us in no time. And, as predicted, it passed us in a blur mere seconds later, a bright red 12-cylinder Ferrari Daytona at redline. Next story. I bought my first house, half of a duplex in Melbourne Beach. It was about 10 years ago, and the house was at the end of a dead-end street. Behind the house was some tidal salt swamps or mangroves on the edge of the Indian River Lagoon. There were a few paths going back into the swampy area, and I walked around out there several times and never experienced anything creepy out there at all. I met several large and small alligators and a myriad of snakes, including cottonmouths, but those never freaked me out. I just walked around them, not a big deal, except the cottons. They tend to be aggressive here in Florida, so I would kill those with my .22 pistol if they did not immediately retreat when I approached. It was actually a very pleasant walk through the trails back there, lots of interesting wildlife and plants to see. But from my first night in that house, I could never sleep well at night in that house. I was a single guy without pets or kids at the time. After the second night, I ended up sleeping with a loaded 12-gauge beside my bed and a light on somewhere in the house. I would make the rounds before bed, ensure that every door and window was shut and locked. I shut and locked my bedroom door each night. Sometimes I would wake up in the middle of the night, get the shoddy, and walk warily around the house to make sure everything was locked. Not once did I ever find anything amiss in that house. No moved objects, no strange sounds, just one spider in the guest bedroom closet. My shared wall was with a married couple in their early 60s from New York. He was a combat vet, and both were very cool people. He and I met and became friends immediately. I brought up, obliquely, the topic of wild animals, gators, cats, etc., a couple of times with him and his wife, and he never ever mentioned that they felt creeped out or worried about animals, watched, etc., not even a bit. Everyone on the street loved living on that street and the area, but for whatever reason, that house always creeped me way out. I cannot think of one reason why I felt creeped out, weirded out so much every minute I was in that house. I traveled a lot with my job, so really only slept in the house about 6 months total. I was never comfortable in that house and sold it after 2 years. Sometimes I would spend a few days at my best friend's house half a mile away, sleeping on his couch rather than drive home and sleep in my own house. I never told the couple next door or any of my friends the real reason I sold the house, only that I wanted to live further south in Florida. Wow. I was glad when I finally closed the sale of that place. I literally heaved a huge sigh of relief when we made it through the closing and shook hands all around. I grew up in a 200-year-old New England farmhouse in coastal New England and never felt creeped out there. And that house made all kinds of strange noises at night and during the day, doors, windows moving, etc. But that's another story. I travel a lot, and I can sleep soundly in any place that I end up in. Someone else's house, fan room of a nuclear power, submarine, back of a Jeep, at work on the job, whatever. But not in that house.